Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
Alright, it's another episode of Saints Drunk History. You people, you donated for it, we love you, that's why they've got the new computer. So this month we're doing the Saints 2006 off season, and I figured out who do I need to get? I'm like, I need to get my boy who up front we went to high school together, Brother Martin Forever, right, Mike? But he does a podcast, yep. Booking the Territory. It's old school wrestling. They rewatch like TBS Saturday Night and old school 80s wrestling. They rewatch it and they do a podcast on it. And if you love wrestling, it's awesome. I don't love new wrestling, but I'm all about the 1980s wrestling. So I love it. Booking the Territory. I was like, Mike, get on the podcast here. Promote your awesome wrestling podcast. And we are going to talk about the Saints 2006 offseason because it started the golden age of Saints football, right? So, Mike, yeah. I'm drinking Shiner Strawberry, and I'm kind of drunk. Hopefully, I can run the new computer in this tapes. What are you drinking tonight?
Hennessy. I'm a Hennessy guy.
Yeah, that's quality. The strawberry beer, you gotta just drink it consistently. You start drinking it during the Astros game, and it gets you, and you're there, right? Astros lost, by the way. So look, the Saints 2006, you know. We talk about it, right, as like the moment that it started it all. But it was 2006 was really weird because, you know, 2005 they had Katrina, and Katrina was a fucking disaster, right? Like, you had people that, you know, Tom Benson, people that threatened him in at Tiger Stadium. But, like, it all got settled in, and, like, the Saints are coming back. So, like, all that was, like, behind us. But it was still, Mike, of, like, I felt like in 2006, like it was a really fragile state. You were like, they're coming back, but I don't know if they're fucking going to stay in New Orleans for 5 years. Like, they're coming back. They got to get it right, and they better win. I mean, we were happy they were coming back, but I don't know about you, but I wasn't at all, like, feeling great about the Saints' long-term future heading into January 2006.
Let me tell you how it made me feel. So, you know, Ralph, I mean, we are of the era, our generation is of the generation that remembers and has not fond memories of Saints football pre-Mora era. So, like, I think you and I and our generation is the last generation that really knows that feeling of what it feels like to just get gut punched by Joe Montana continuously, just being kicked in the sack and the nads constantly. So
constantly. It was all just sadness and Charlie Brown and Lucy. Just the football just gets pulled out from under you. That's all it was. It was mixed in moments of joy.
And even after the Mora era, we only had one playoff victory, so we still were like in the doldrums, and we were still diehards, but we had never really tasted any type of success. So to answer your question, though, you're right. 2005 was just pathetic, you know, and I don't mean that in the way it sounds. It's just that there was so much storm. We thought we were going to lose our team. So going into 2006, I agree. I was just kind of happy. And a little bit, like, elated that, okay, it looks like we're not going to lose them. So I'm just happy my team that I was born and raised and bred and bred to root for as a diehard New Orleans Saints fan, I still have them. That was, like, my focus.
I'll say this. You reminded me two things about 2005 that we need to talk about. The only two things I really remember about 2005, because it was – it was horrible. I moved to California. The two things that stick out most is opening game, they won in Carolina, right? And it was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and it was this awesome moment. They came back. Joe Horn's like ranting at people on the sideline. He makes like three catches. They kick the field goal. They win. The only other memory I have from 2005 is I flew home from California, and the Saints, I believe they played on Christmas Eve in San Antonio. And they were like 3-11. And they were like, it was them and the Texans fighting for the number one pick. And like, after like 6 weeks, I was like, fuck this. I want him to lose. I want Haslett gone. I want the number one pick. And look, you can say that I'm not a fan, whatever. You can root however you want to root for the Saints. But there's times where I feel like you need to root for the Saints to lose. We hadn't been there in a long, long time. But there's certain points where you're like, I want Ditka fired. So you root against them. So I was rooting against the Saints. And they played Detroit on Christmas Eve. And they were fucking winning the game, Mike. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, you can't fucking win this game. You can't win this game. Because the difference between 3-13 and 4-12 is like you pick first or second or you pick like eighth. And I'm just
right.
I'm just ranting and raving in my house, my parents' house. And I'm like, I cannot win this fucking game. And it's like fourth and like 25. And I'm like, Detroit's not going to hit this. And the Saints are going to win this fucking pointless ass game. And we're not going to have any shot at Reggie Bush. Joey Harrington completed the pass. Detroit does like a fire drill, gets the kicking team on, and kicks the field goal and wins at the gun. And I was like, it was like the Saints won the fucking Super Bowl. Like, I was running around. My wife, my mom at the time was like, what are you doing? I'm like, man, all I wanted to do today was be entertained and have the Saints lose then. This is beautiful. I'm like, what the fuck does it matter if they beat Detroit? They beat Detroit or you get Reggie Bush. I'm like, you want Reggie Bush, right? But at that time, you didn't know they would have it. So it works out. They have the offseason. And before the draft, like, they got rid of Haslett. And I was a little bit surprised. I was kind of out of the loop by then. I had worked at WWL, but I didn't know too much sources. But I was a little bit surprised, but I was happy. I was like, they got rid of Haslett. It was time. It was, like, just underachieving. I felt like Haslett... With Aaron, you can say whatever you want about Aaron Brooks as a quarterback, but I felt like with Aaron Brooks and Joe Horn and Deuce all at their peak, like the Saints, they didn't win enough, and I was happy that fucking Haslett was gone. How did you feel about the Haslett era just being over when they got rid of
him? No, I think it was time. See, here's the thing. I'm glad they didn't give him a mulligan in 05 just because of the storm, because I think it was time just based on what we had seen, the regression I felt of the offense with Deuce and Brooks and Horn. Here's the thing, too. I think it's you on the show. I get confused sometimes. But I think you always talk about how a lot of Saints fans are kind of – I think some of them are in denial. Aaron Brooks was the number one quarterback the Saints ever had, probably.
Dude, it's not even –
I mean, his stats prove it. He was, like, really – he was good. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, we got Breeze now, so it's not even competition. But like, you know, Brooks was really, really good. I mean, he's the first guy to win a playoff game. But so I was not a Brooks hater. Even towards the end, I didn't hate Aaron Brooks. I thought he was good. But the problem with Brooks was he peaked like too early, and then it just bottomed out, and then it was ruined. So to answer your question, I was glad they moved on from Jim Haslett at that point.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're gonna do a Aaron Brooks is his whole episode of drunk history, but like,
oh, most definitely,
you can't argue that he's not the second best quarterback in Saints. You can the argument is Archie never had a chance to be good because the Saints were incompetently run, and that's the fair argument. But to say that Archie was better on the field than Brooks, no. But like Brooks, it was you know. The whole thing, and they started the off season, and I don't know who you wanted as coach, but my thing is coaches for teams. I don't like retreads. You know, I'm not a big guy of this guy won a bunch of places, so bring him here and he'll win. Like I wanted this. I was like, the Saints, go get somebody young, go get somebody that's hungry. I don't want a retread. You know, I don't want a Marty Schottenheimer or this. Or they interviewed Ted Cottrell to do the Rooney Rule, and that, like, scared the crap out of me. I was like, not Chad Cottrell. The guy I wanted, though, I wanted Mike Tomlin. I was like, he's young, he's cool, he's energetic, it'll be fun. Like, that's what I wanted. So when they got Sean Payton, I was like, oh, the offensive coordinator for Dallas, the guy who got the play calling taken away when the Giants went to the Super Bowl, they pulled the play calling duties from him, and the head coach took it over, and they made the Super Bowl. I was like, ugh. And he looked like Lee Harvey Oswald. I did a whole column for WWL making that joke. I don't know if they would let me do that now. It's a different time, you know?
They probably wouldn't.
They even had a little picture graphic they did. I think it was a little too, like, now it's a little too sensitive. They wouldn't let me do that column. It was nothing but Lee Harvey Oswald jokes.
There's a lot of shit. It's amazing. There's a lot of stuff you can't get away with just 12, 13 years later.
But
now.
I stand by it. He looks like Lee Harvey Oswald or Frankie Munoz. But I was not. How did you feel? Sean Payton, I didn't hate it, but I wasn't like, yeah, it's a fucking awesome hire. I was like, eh.
I'll go back to what I was saying. I was so happy that it looked like we were keeping him at least for the year. That I was like, okay, this Peyton guy, let's give him a chance. I mean, Hazlitt didn't have a track record before we got him. He won one playoff game. And you got to remember, you got to put yourself in the shoes of a Saints fan back then. We had one freaking playoff victory in all those years. So it was like the bar was low. I hate to say it, but it's true. So when we got him, I was like, okay. And then I had a friend who was a Giants fan who he was like, he's like, man, you know, they kind of he felt that Peyton got the run, did a deal with that whole play calling thing. But yeah. he said Peyton's he was a really good offensive coordinator. He had an imagination. I distinctly remember my friend Mark telling me that, a coworker of mine. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I mean, you're a Saints fan, so you're never optimistic. You're like, well, we'll see.
The only thing that gave me hope was Green Bay wanted him. He thought he had the Green Bay.
That's job. True.
So,
yes,
so
yes,
I was like, Green Bay is a well-run organization. So yeah. If they wanted him, at least he's not some, you know, third or, you know, he's the Saints are his second choice, but at least the Saints were on the right track. They were interviewing somebody that other teams were interested in. So
right.
I was happy about that. You know, and the thing that's funny is, you know, people remember like that Drew Brees was the first big sign-in in the offseason. It really wasn't. Like, Scott Fujita was the first big offseason sign-in they did in free agency. And I remember they paid him 4 years, $10 million, which now, Mike, you're like, 4 years, $10 million, that's not, like, that's nothing, right? You're like,
right, yeah,
you're
yeah,
like,
chump
what
change.
That's nothing. But at the time, dude, that was like a massive overpay because Scott Fujita was just like a special teams guy for Dallas and it started for Kansas City and was nothing special. But at the time, you know, like I had left WWL and Kenny Wilkerson was still the Saints sideline reporter. And he was doing the show with Bobby Hebert and I would still talk to him. And he had said to me, he's like, dude, he's like, no one wants to come to New Orleans. New Orleans is destroyed from Katrina.
It's a wasteland.
It's a wasteland.
Dude.
They gotta overpay. I'm like. He's like. They offered Scott Fujita. Like I forget the team that won him. I'm like. Kenny Wilson's like. They offered him twice what the other team offered him. The other team offered him three years, $5 million, and the Saints offered him 4 years and $10 million. And that's what you had to do, man. You had to do, and the Saints had to do like reckless overpay. Because think about it. If you're Scott Fujita, you got options. And you got a wife, and she's like, I'm going to go to New Orleans that's destroyed. I'm going to go to Philly.
He was a wreck.
Like, you got to say to the wife, you got to say, it's $5 million or $10 million. We got to go. It's like life-changing money or just like mass, you know? So the Saints are just like doing a reckless overpay. But I remember telling Kenny Wilkerson at the time, I was like, I like that. I like the Saints understood that like Katrina like destroyed the city and we got to do what we got to do. So, I mean, that was fun. But do you remember the moment you heard that they were in the Drew Brees sweepstakes? Because I can remember exactly where I were, but you tell me when you heard them, you're like, oh, they're going after Brees. Like, what was your thought process about that?
I had always kind of liked Brees because I even had him on a fantasy football team, I think in 04. Yeah. I think I had him in 04. So I liked Brees, but I mean, I can't tell you I was super stoked because of the freaking shoulder. That's his moneymaker. I mean, what am I supposed to do here? What if this guy isn't healed? So I was glad, but at the same time, I was, of course, cautiously optimistic.
I remember I was driving either home. I know I was driving. I don't know what I was driving home from work. My friend called me, and he said, are they getting Brees? Are they fucking serious about this? I'm like, what? He's like, you haven't heard? I'm like, no. He's like, the Saints are going all in to try to get Brees. And I was driving home. I said, I'll text Kenny. I'll see what's up. And I remember that I was like, he just had his shoulder like totally destroyed. Like Gerald Warren right. Fell on it, destroyed it. It's in pieces. And I remember, I was at the time too. 2006, man, that was Leinart and Vince Young, and it now, yep. Now everybody looks back and is like, well, of course the Saints went with Brees. That's obvious. No, man. At the time, Vince Young just won the championship for the college football for Texas and looked fucking amazing. Leinart looked amazing at USC, although his senior year he didn't look as good. He's like, something was wrong with him, and his shoulder was like kind of fucked up and never got better. But at the time, you were like, man, you go with Brees, or you go with these two young, awesome guys, Vince Young and Matt Leinart. You know, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I remember I talked to Kenny Wilkerson, and Kenny Wilkerson's like, the Saints are going to make Drew Brees say no to a fucking ridiculous amount of money. I was like, what's the number? He's like, I don't even know. He's like, I'm trying to confirm it yet. But he's like, I think it's going to be $10 million, maybe $25 million guaranteed. And I was like, are you – because, that you know, that's 2006 money.
With a bum shoulder.
I was like, really? He's like, yeah. So he's like, if Brees goes to Miami, he is going to turn down a shitload of money from the Saints. And I remember, like, that was, like, pre-Twitter and, like, message boards news. But, like, that was, like – if you wanted, like, sports news, like, you still had to go to, like, the sites, right? Like, ESPN or WWE.
Yep.
So I remember that day just, like, getting on the web and just, like, refreshing the page, like, a ton of times. And I remember, I think it was Len Pasquarelli, the old CBS Sportsline guy that, like, broke the story. And he was like, Miami, he flunked the physical, and they told him, go do your offer with New Orleans. We won't leak it that you failed our physical so you could still get your money from New Orleans or whatever. And I remember I was like you at my time. I was like, this is cool, but I the internet, like, the, you know, like certain like archives get deleted, right? And you can't go back. The one people like will tweet old shit at me, like Mike, that I did, and that I'm wrong all the time. But there was one column that I wrote that is probably my favorite, one of my favorites ever, because I wasn't right that Drew Brees was going to be awesome, because I won't admit that I predicted that. But I wrote the column the next day, and it was basically like, Dear Drew Brees and Dear God. And I was like, listen, Miami chose Dante Culpepper and the Saints got Drew Brees. I'm like, this is not going to work out for both teams. One of these teams is going to be wrong, and it's going to be a fucking disaster for them, and one of them is going to be absolutely 100% right, and it's going to be awesome. I said, please, God, let it be the Saints. Because if it's not the Saints, they might be in San Antonio in 3 years. It's the Saints have got to be right on this. And I'm like, I don't know if they're right. I just know that this is not going to go – it's not going to go badly for both, and it's not going to go great for both. Somebody's going to be horribly, horribly wrong. And that column, like, I didn't know if Brees was going to be good, but I was totally right about that. I mean – how did you when they got Brees, were you like, you're feeling on, I know you said the shoulder, but how did you, like, were you really pumped when they got him? Were you like, yes?
Well, see, by that point, here's the thing that was scary then. I wasn't like overly excited. I was like, all right, well, we got him. I just hope everything's good. The thing that was really weird though was thinking about the draft, because I was like, I thought in my mind, I kept thinking at that point, Reggie Bush is going to go number one to Houston. Yep. I just kept thinking that he's going to go number one. So the thing was, I was like, well, we got a quarterback now. So that means I'm going to assume we don't draft Leinart or Vince Young at number two. So does that mean they go Mario Williams? Because I remember seeing all the draft boards. Like, is this, people going to think this is crazy, but like, there were a lot of draft boards that had Mario Williams as the top pick, and there were a lot that had Reggie Bush as the top pick too, projected.
Yeah, so, Mario Williams was a guy kind of like Davenport this year, but not even more so, where like he went from like, you know, in January, he's like, oh, he's going to be like a top 20, 25 pick, to like, he just like shot up the board.
Yeah.
You know,
basically, he shot up.
Basically, Mario Williams is kind of like if Davenport had played at LSU and had the same numbers that he had at San Antonio, he'd have been a top 5 pick. Like,
Because
they looked at him and they were like, Mario Williams, they're like, that dude is everything you want in a defensive. He got size, he got speed. He didn't really play that great at NC State, but he's still NC State. And he just, like, he was, like, the whole offseason, he just, like, was climbing, climbing,
right.
climbing.
Right. So I was like, when you asked the Breeze question, I was excited, and I guess I was semi-happy, but I was still thinking about the shoulder. And then I'm going, okay, well, that really changes the draft, because in my mind, again, I was thinking all along, even though Williams was up there, I was like, there's no way the Texans – I'm thinking, no way Houston does not take Reggie Bush, and now what do we do at number two?
Fun.
Like, so do we – That's where I was at, knowing that we had Breeze. Now, here's the thing. It's funny because Breeze's shoulder, I still, like, even after the first year he was here and took us to the NFC title game, I still wasn't sold, as crazy as that sounds.
No,
I know we're getting ahead.
No,
but
I made jokes about his shoulder during the year. But I'll tell you, funny thought, and I'm getting drunker. This will make you want to drink more. The plan B for the Saints, if Drew Breeze had said no, was Josh McCown. They were going to sign him, and they were going to draft Leinart. Talk about the fork in the road. The fork in the road. One way went to, like, Super Bowls and happiness. The other one was a fucking cliff. Like, I mean, like, because Drew Brees said yes, and, like, McNeil was, like, going to fly in, and the Saints, like, canceled the visit. So, like, I don't know. Maybe Sean Payton would have found another quarterback between then, after that, and it would have worked out, and it would have been okay. But, like, man, that is, like, let's make
that's
a deal.
That's two different extremes.
Yeah,
dude.
Like, you know, it
was that's like me or you buying a scratch off where we win $1 million versus five.
No, it's like you owe them $5.
Yeah.
It's like I'm gonna need.
But I mean, I was mild on Breeze even then. I was like, all right, well, you know, we needed a quarterback, so I guess we got one now. Let's see what happens with the draft.
Yeah, and the thing is, they went and they didn't even think they were getting Reggie Bush, because they signed. Remember, people forget they signed Michael Bennett, who was the old Minnesota running back. Who was the guy who was up? He's kind of like, his physical skills, like, he never matched up to his on-field performance never met up to his physical skills. But he was a guy where you were like, pretty interesting. Another guy that, like, they had to overpay, you know.
Yeah, they did. I forgot about that. I'm glad you reminded me. I totally forgot about Bennett. That one slipped my mind.
Yeah. He was another guy where you were like, he got sentenced to 5 years in prison, for anybody that's as I wiki him. His career has not gone well. But, like, you know, he had been a guy where, like, you look at him, he in 2002 he had almost 1,300 yards for Minnesota. But I mean, those 2001 to those 98 to 2003-04 Minnesota teams were just unbelievable. But he had some skills, and he was a guy that started getting hurt, you know, and the Saints signed him. So that, like, Reggie Bush, like, it wasn't in the plans. Like, they weren't even thinking that he was going to be there. And I remember another thing where, like, the Texans, I want to say, in 2000, like, they agreed to a deal with Mario Williams before the draft and signed him.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And I remember being like, oh, shit, this is happening. And I remember, like, all day at work, I just watched Reggie Bush YouTube highlights. Like, I was just like this. Because at the time, I was working in the sports department at the Orange County Register. And people, I know you probably don't, people that listen to this podcast, that, you know, you're not from California or whatever, so you wouldn't understand it. Man, when USC is going and is cooking and is awesome, L.A. is the Lakers and USC football.
Dude,
USC football overtakes.
When that season, I am not a USC fan in the least bit. Oh, my God, I used to hate the Pac-10 and Pac-12 now. I don't want to say I despise them the way I used to, but, you know, we had that whole thing with LSU and USC splitting the title. But anyway, I was not a USC fan.
But you could say it.
But when – that was bullshit. But when Reggie Bush was playing at USC, I would purposely stay up late to catch his games because the dude was just unreal.
The Fresno game in 2005 was fucking – he had like 600 yards off. It was like Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl come to life.
Dude, yes, it was freaking
ridiculous.
He
did a play where he ran one way, cut it back, went all the way back, like the old Tecmo Bowl play you do with Bo Jackson where you run to the top of the screen and just go back around just for fun.
Yes.
And he did it in real life. And you were like, I can't fuck it. He just...
He covered 300 yards on that play.
I was like, I can't believe it. And the thing is, I'm like, the Saints are getting him. And the thing is, look, people look at it, forget it now, and like, look, Drew Brees and Sean Payton kept it going, and they've had sellouts ever since. But the thing that drove the sellouts and made the 2006 season the first time the Saints ever sold the Dome out with nothing but season tickets, it was Reggie Bush, man.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Reggie Bush, oh my God, they're drafting Reggie Bush. Was just that draft party. I remember listening to it on a stream. It was fucking bedlam. I had people call. My friends were going, and they're like, it's like people were like, it's like football jazz fest. People were calling me. They're like,
it was insane. It was like Mardi Gras. Like I remember sitting there watching it when it happened and it was unfolding, where they made the deal, where Houston made the deal, and we knew Mario Williams before the draft even happened was going to them, and you're just waiting for that draft pick to come down where they picked Williams, and then it's like we picked Bush, and man, my phone lit up like a freaking like Christmas morning, man. Every freaking friend I had as a Saints fan back home was texting me, oh my God, we got the best player in a draft, man. It was incredible. It was like pandemonium.
I remember my mom. My mom called me up. They go, it's like, Reggie Bush, I see highlights of him. Is he any good? I'm like,
yeah.
This is the most excited I've ever been in my life, Mom. This is amazing. And the thing was, another thing that's like, here's the thing about 2006 that like, you could believe in whatever God or whatever religion or you're not religious, but like the confluence of events that like went well for the Saints was like Reggie. It was Reggie Bush. You know who was behind door number two? It was gonna be AJ Hawk.
Dude, at number two. It was the perfect storm is what it was. And the irony is, you know, it was a storm that freaking just destroyed the city. But there's no other way to explain it. It was literally, like you said, a perfect confluence of just – I mean, and it wasn't just Reggie that they got lucky with in the draft.
And the thing was about the draft was I remember a friend of mine who's really knowledgeable. I looked at the draft and afterwards – I wasn't that excited, but the thing that excited me about that draft was you love Reggie, and I knew Roman Harper from the SEC, right? And I knew, I was like, he's going to be a guy that's going to be ready-made. He's not going to be great, but he'll play, and you know what you're going to get. So I was like, I like that pick. The rest of it, I was like, Colston, whatever. He's the seventh round pick. Jari Evans, I'm like, small school. I'm like, you know, I'm out of Bloomsburg State. I thought that was a financial service. I was like, I don't know what the fuck that is. But the thing I did like about the draft was Loomis, he got Jeff. They traded back and flipped picks with teams and got Jeff Fain at center. And they got Hollis Thomas, you know? And so I like the fact that they added veterans, because the thing is, in free agency, people didn't really want to go there, and you can't overpay everybody, right? So, like, at the draft, I was like, it's all right. But, like, and they got Street, and I was like, Street, whatever, Northwest, you know? So, like, you didn't think about it. Like, I wasn't, like, I was doing backflips over Reggie Bush, but the rest of it, I was like, whatever. I don't know these guys. I mean,
That was exactly what I did. Like when you sent me like a couple of bulleted lists ahead of time, like, you know, things you just thought you wanted to touch on. The first thing I thought of when I saw all you had was draft thoughts, my immediate thought was, well, shit, those guys panned out. Colston, Streif definitely panned out. Evans panned out. Harper panned out. But damn, the only one I was excited about that day and that weekend was Reggie Bush. I mean, I'm not even going to lie. He was the guy. Colston's a seventh-round pick. I mean, come on.
I forgot about this. We need to mention this because people on the internet, you know, like not unlike me where my columns and thoughts are up, a lot of them are up for all time. People, they can hide because there's Twitter. They didn't have Twitter back then. They had message boards, and people could pretend like they didn't they didn't say nice things
or bad things.
Let me tell you something. People were not fucking talking about Colston. People were talking about Mike Haas. the sixth-round pick from Oregon State.
They sure were.
Who were tearing. He tore that shit up in college. People were fucking super excited about him. And they will lie and they will tell you, no, I knew Colston was good all along, man.
No.
It was Mike Haas. And people, and I admit it too, I watched the YouTube clips of him, and I was pumped about Mike Haas, and he was a fucking disaster. You know? But, you know, they had... That draft, the only two guys that were bad were Haas and Josh Lay, the defensive backs.
Those are only two.
Ninkovich was in that draft, but he ended up getting hurt and going on and being great for New England. But, yep. The thing about that draft was Zach Strief took a moment, but, like,
that was a foundation, dude. That draft set the foundation. Look, it's only a few players. The thing is, it just took that little bit, along with a little bit of luck in free agency, you know, with like guys like Fujita and Breeze. Mm-hmm. There's others too, like, you know, Terrence Copper was a good like special teams player in free agency. Yeah. Omar Stoutmeyer was a freaking safety who started a bunch of games a year. It just took that little. It was those guys along with that draft that just like inch the Saints along just enough to get over that hump and turn a disastrous season into something magical. But you're right. It's like just a perfect freaking confluence of circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, the thing was, you know, they added like Billy Miller and like you said, Copper, who he would catch a hail. You know, the only thing I remember about him is he caught a Hail Mary against Atlanta. You know, but they had Jason Kraft still. He was a holdover. They brought in like Marks. You know, and that was a weird thing they did.
Seminole and Shanley.
That was a thing where you know, in the summer, you know, we talk about the offseason. I'm gonna include the summer too. Like the Saints were a fucking disaster in the preseason. Don't let anybody fucking tell you different. And there's a game where they played in Shreveport against the Cowboys, and they were they were so bad. Bill Parcells was like, "They're so bad, we didn't even get to run enough plays against their first team because it was pointless. Like this is a waste for us." And they were so bad. Like I feel like Sean Payton did the trade for Shanley after the game. He's like, I need a linebacker. Bill, can you help a brother out? I need somebody. He's like, Bill's like, I got you. But they did a trade during the training camp that at the time I was like, what the fuck are they doing? They traded Dante Stallworth for Simino and a second round pick.
Yep.
And everybody was like, what are you doing? Like, because Colston looked terrible. Like, Colston couldn't get through mini camp. He was like out of breath and like couldn't get through the practice. You're like, what are you doing? But at the same time, you also I didn't think of it as Colston being good. I was just like, they just want to clear out Dante Stallworth, because Dante Stallworth was a guy who was like, if he wasn't 100% healthy and feeling good, he wouldn't play, right? If he had any little nick, he wasn't going to play. So I was like, that's just Sean Payton setting the tone. You drafted him as one, you got a two, so that's not too bad. You know, but they were bad in the preseason, Mike. They were bad.
Dude, that I will never forget, you know, because I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I will never forget that game in preseason where the Cowboys just freaking slaughtered them. I mean, they took them behind the woodshed and just beat the dog shit out of them. And going to work that next day, and people were like, "Well, your Saints were in midseason form." I was like, "Dude, it's preseason." They're like, "Yeah, but they look like crap." I'm like, "All right." And look, Ralph, here's the funny part. I told them, "Y'all come talk to me when we play y'all in the regular season." I didn't have hopes that when they came to Texas Stadium later on in 2006, that they were going to bring them behind the shed and bust that ass 42-17. However, I was saying that on that day in preseason because they look like royal dog doo-doo.
They did. 30-7.
Oh, it was terrible. And it should have been worse than that, to be honest with you.
It should have been. I wish I had the game story. They don't have – it's hard to find the stats because it's so old.
I tried to find it.
I wanted to find the Bill Parcells quote, but he was like, he was like, "This is fucking terrible, this team. We couldn't even get the reps. We couldn't even get enough reps for the first –
They looked horrendous. Let me say one more thing about that game in hindsight that's funny. If you ever If you ever read Breeze's, I think this is the game he quoted where he didn't, the pass wasn't completed, but he says he threw like a 35-yard pass in this game where it was the first time where he like felt like he could let one rip, and it was like, all right, that felt all right.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, what?
Yeah, because I mean, he like, looked fucking, he was looking terrible. Like, I remember you, Kenny Wilkerson was like,
35 yards.
Was like, Kenny Wilkerson would text, Kenny Wilkerson would text me. He's like, Breeze, he's like, the shoulder is looking rough. He's like, he's not looking right. And I joked in my I found my preseason preview for WBL the other day. I found it. Number one thing was let me read it. Don't let there be a breaking news box at the top of the WWL homepage saying Drew Brees is out of practice to rest his shoulder. That was my number one fear, that like his shoulder wouldn't heal up. And it was like, that was how I was like, just don't have breaking news at the top of the WWL page that like Brees is not practicing today because his arm hurts. Like, that's all I want. And it was, I mean, that team was bad. And I mean, I was like, if they get to 8-8, it's fine. You know, we won't go into the season, obviously. But then, obviously, I mean, you look at it, it just, like, everything had to go right for them. And it just did. And you look back at it, and I almost feel like it's God being like, I got to help them out. Like, I got to help them out. Like, we can't have the Saints leave. So I'm just going to be like, boop, we're going to get Reggie Bush. Boop, Colston's going to be awesome. Up, your draft's going to be awesome. Up, you know, you're going to get famous. Like, everything possible is going to work out. Like, you look back at it, and it's just ridiculous how well it went.
Dude, it was everything from getting, I think, somewhat lucky with Breeze, Sean Payton, to the draft just falling perfect for you. I mean, damn near perfect. I mean, only two people really ended up being, you know, people that you didn't really have that would contribute over the years. The trades for Shanley and Cimino. I mean, we look back at that as like, but dude, they played very important roles, like just in that season.
Yeah.
The little things like the, you know, the Billy Millers, the freaking Omar Stoutmyers, Fujita. I say little things, but you know, again, Terrence Copper playing special teams. It was just like a perfect storm. You know, again, Katrina ruined it, but it was like a perfect storm, man. That like really led to it all. And I mean, I'm like you, dude. I thought maybe from 3-13 they would go freaking at best 6-10, 7-9, maybe 8-8 if you got another miracle. I never expected what we got. Let's just, you know, obviously. No. And if anybody says they did predict that, they're lying.
No, I picked them 8-8, and my editor at WWL at the time was like, sure you want to do that? I'm like, I picked them like 8-8, and I was like, it's going to be 8-8, and it's going to be magical, and they're going to get in the playoffs. Like, it's like an 8-8 garbage team. Like, it's all going to fall right. Like, I can feel it. Like, it's going to be – I'm like, but it's going to be like a fun – like, it's going to be a fun 8-8, because by the end of the year – Breeze is going to be healed up, and you're going to be like, okay, we got a quarterback. It's going to be cool. 2007, 2008, it's going to be fun. And my editor's like, you sure you want to do that? 8-8 seems kind of optimistic, Ralph. I'm like, yeah. I mean, that's the thing with sports, Mike, as I get drunk and drunk, and I really hope this podcast records. But you just – the thing is, it's like you never know, like, how it's going to go. And people always look back and want to, like – make themselves an expert, right? I didn't know. The main thing for me was like, I think when you looked at it in the off season, the moves, the thing that I liked about it was I felt like at least in the constraints of Katrina and everything that happened, they still were like, fuck it, we're gonna be aggressive, and if that means we gotta overpay for Fujita and we gotta overpay for Michael Bennett and then trade him later, like they were still being aggressive, and I liked it that they didn't sit back and say, oh, it was Katrina and we can't really do anything and we just hire a coach and we're just gonna build through the draft and we can't, like, people don't want to come here, and like they were like, no. We got a coach, and we're going to throw fucking Benson's money around, and we're going to fucking make this shit happen. And they did it. Like, because, you know, I think a lot of teams, like Mike Brown, Cincinnati, would have just been like, oh, it's Katrina. We can't really do anything. No one wants to come here. We got to rebuild. We got to take our time. We got to do it through the draft, and we can't really get free agents because they don't want to come here. And you're just going to have to accept that. Like, the Saints just were like, no. We're going to do whatever we fucking can do. And they did it. And I think, you know, they deserve credit for that, you know?
Dude, it's really a miracle, and they do deserve credit because you can thank everything we've celebrated since that time. I know there's only been one Super Bowl, but it's been a golden age of success in my eyes. Because if you'd have told me back in 06 in that offseason, hey, here's the deal, Mike. Here's the deal, Ralph. You're only going to get one Super Bowl in between now and 2017, but this is what we're going to do to put things in place. You'd have took that deal and ran.
Dude, I'd have been like, dude, I signed. Do you want me to sign? Do you need a kidney? Do you need like a
firstborn?
Do you need me to name? Do you need my name? Tell me what to name my firstborn. Do you need a testicle? Like, I'm willing to do it. Like, yeah. just say the word. Like, I mean, there was no expectation. And the thing was, it was the golden age of Saints football. And I just remember, you know, we're not going to get into to all the season, obviously, but the moment where I knew that it was different, and people say I'm lying or whatever, but that opening game, when they went out and they kicked a bunch of field goals, but you could just see, like, Sean Payton was coaching rings around Romeo Crennel. And I know you're like, when you look back at it now, you're like, of course he fucking coached rings around Romeo Crennel. And it was the Browns. But at the time, after coming off of Haslett and Ditka, you were like, oh, my God. Like, Sean Payton is clearly, like, coaching the pants off of Romeo Crennel. And it's awesome. And they squeezed it out, right? But at the time, it was just a huge epiphany. I felt like they got a chance. Like, clearly Sean Payton knows what he's doing, and it's like, hallelujah. Like, when in 2006, yeah. When in 2006 did you know, you're like, okay, they got something here?
I kind of felt it the next week in Green Bay because they went down 14, yeah. but won, and then I think this is going to sound easy to say now because it's like they were 3-0 by that point, so of course they had it. But being in that Superdome to see the dome get reopened because I was there, I knew then, but because you could really feel it then, but it was so emotional. But that second week was definitely – because you got to remember, we're from a Saints generation that never came back from Leeds. I mean,
yeah, you were just like, yeah, they won the week before. They're going to be 1-1 coming home. This is great. And they just kept going at it, you know? And you were like
– It was crazy. And, hey, and let me say this too before you wrap up. This ties into this season, but also 2009. You actually wrote a column in 2009 towards the end of the year, and I don't remember which week it was, but I remember distinctively reading this. And you talked about how in 2006 we were just happy to have football back, and we were happy to have the Saints. And although they got to the NFC Championship game, they lost. Yeah, we were upset, but we weren't crushed. And I remember you saying in 2009, we can't fool ourselves. If we don't win the Super Bowl this year, it's gonna feel really, really. It's gonna hurt.
I think that was either the week. It might have been the week of the NFC Championship game, but there was a game. Me and my wife went to the Dolphin game when they were down like 21-0 or whatever it was.
Oh yeah,
and
I remember
going into the fourth quarter and the Saints were down 10. And the thing is, pro tip for people. If you can afford it, when you go on a Saints road game, buy the best tickets you can afford, because the better the tickets, the better the class of people around you. So we had we were like 50-yard line, like 10 seats, because the people that can afford the 50-yard line seats in the 10th row, they can't get nuts with you because they're lawyers and doctors and they got money and they can't fuck with you, right? That's my
especially in an NFL stadium.
Yeah, that's my theory. So if you go on a road with the Saints, stay at the cheap motel, but get the good ticket. You'll have a better experience. That's a tip from Uncle Ralph. But they went to the game, and they were like down 10, and I'm like, all the Dolphin fans are kind of nervous. They're like, what do you think? I'm like, we got this. I'm like, y'all should be up like 20, and you're not. And the Saints just going to score on you, and we're going to win this game. And my wife looked at me. She's like, I can't believe you're this confident. I'm like, it's going to happen. I'm like, it just is. But, I mean, that was in those moments. And it all started, like, it all started with 2006 with the offseason. Right. And then, like, the delineation point. That's not even a word. It's a marker of, like, the Saints before
delineation point.
Delineation. Yeah, that's the word. That's what you're here for, Mike. The word, like, you could do the Saints history before Gleason and after Gleason. But the thing was, the offseason 2006, and that's why I wanted to have you on, is because you look back at it, and if the further it gets away, Mike, the more I'm like, how the fuck did that happen? Like, you just look at it, and I'm like, how did it all just, like, come together perfectly? Like, it's almost like if you wrote it as a movie, people would be like, that's ridiculous.
Dude, it is ridiculous, and that's why I get hot about people that when we've had these 7 and 9 years and people want to criticize Breeze and criticize this and that. I was like, you don't want Breeze no more? Don't fucking talk to me, because
until the early 80s,
in early 90s and mid 90s, do not talk to me about the Breeze criticism.
Yeah,
ain't saying he's perfect, but don't come at me with that. And I can look back to 06 and be like, you know, it's lucky we got this dude. I'm real glad. We might only got one Super Bowl out of him at this point. Who knows if we'll get another. But damn, I'm glad we got him.
People are like, oh, man, we could get rid of Breeze and rebuild it, you know, before this past year. I'm like, man, you know, rebuild. Do you know how miserable fucking 3-13, followed by 4-12, followed by 6-10. Do you realize how fucking miserable it is?
Hey, when
it's,
most people don't know that, Ralph.
When it's
That's
like
the
middle of October and you're like, it's done, I'm like, you need to thank God. And I'm on the ride Breeze until he fucking, his arm falls off. I'm on that bandwagon.
Bro, I want him to be, like, you know, I'm a wrestling fan. I talk old school wrestling all the time. I want it to be where Breeze is like the dude who has taken too many chair shots to the head, and he's literally a corpse of himself before we get rid of him. And you know what? If that means riding him until, okay, it hits rock bottom, great. You know why? Because once he's gone, the odds of it not hitting rock bottom are very 100. Slim, bro. But you've said this before. Most teams don't go from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers.
No, you go from
work
you
that
go
way.
From Jim Kelly, like the Bills, to 25 years later, they're still fucking looking for a quarterback. That's what you're gonna go to. Here's the thing, and this is a wrestling analogy, and then we'll get out of here. Wrestling analogy. What do they always say about wrestlers? The great wrestlers, you go out on your back and you lose your final match, right, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, the conventional wisdom in the territories was especially like that, where, you know, when you go to the next territory, or if you're done, I mean, you want to put the young guy over. Yeah, I get you.
I'm perfectly fine with Drew Brees going out on his back. And that's
right.
It. So
I think people think that like crushes the memory. I'm like, hell no. If he goes out on his back, like you're describing, you know what? He still gave me a Super Bowl, something I never thought I'd get.
If they win the Super Bowl this year and get a second one, and then in 2019, in week 6, he gets crushed and it's knee, whatever, and we get 2 out of him, and then it's like he's done because he's 41, and 41-year-olds don't recover from a blown-up knee or a blown-up shoulder. I'll be like, it was good. It was worth it. I'm glad we did the 2-year extension. Whatever. I don't care. I don't care whatever you told me. They could have bridged it with whoever. No. It was worth it. It was beautiful, and I loved it. So, people, booking the territory, you can find him on Facebook. You can find him on YouTube. He's helped me a lot with our crappy YouTube channel, which we're trying to get better. Mike's been helping me. Go to YouTube. Booking the territory. Or Mike Mills, you can find him on Twitter. Mike, you know, Mike 504 Saints. Guy, thanks for joining me. It's been fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints history possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.